Hello, this is Paula with the Food Bank County News on Thursday, February 19th, 2026. We'll start with a story titled, I Am Reverend Jesse L. Jackson, Sr., 1941 to 2026. I Am Somebody. Reverend Jackson, Jesse Jackson, leader of the Civil Rights Movement, has died. And this is written in the Associated Press in Chicago. The Reverend Jesse L. Jackson, a protege of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. and two-time presidential candidate who led the civil rights movement for decades after the Reverend leader's assassination, died Tuesday. He was 84 years old. As a young organizer in Chicago, Jackson was called to meet with King at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee, shortly before King was killed, and he publicly positioned himself thereafter as King's successor. Santita Jackson confirmed that her father, who had a rare neurological disorder, died at home in Chicago surrounded by family. Jackson had led a lifetime of crusades in the United States and abroad, advocating for the poor and underrepresented on issues including voting rights, job opportunities, education, and health care. He scored diplomatic victories with world leaders, and through the Rainbow Push Coalition, he channeled cries for black pride and self-determination into corporate boardrooms, pressuring executives to make America a more open and equitable society. And when he declared, I am somebody, in a poem he often repeated, he sought to reach people of all colors. I may be poor, but I am somebody. I may be young, but I am somebody. I may be on welfare, but I am somebody, Jackson intoned. It was a message he took literally and personally, having risen from obscurity in the segregated South to become America's best-known civil rights activist once since King. Our father was a servant leader, not only to our family, but to the oppressed, the voiceless, and the overlooked around the world, the Jackson family said in a statement posted online. We shared him with the world, and in return, the world became part of our extended family. Fellow civil rights activist, the Reverend Al Sharpton, said his mentor was not simply a civil rights leader. He was a movement unto himself. He taught me that protests must have purpose, that faith must have feet, and that justice is not seasonal. It is a daily work, Sharpton wrote in a statement, adding that Jackson taught trying is as important as triumph, that you do not wait for the dream to come true, you work to make it real. Despite profound health challenges in his final years, including the disorder that affected his ability to move and speak, Jackson continued protesting against racial injustice into the era of Black Lives Matter. In 2024, he appeared at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago and at a city council meeting to show support for a resolution backing a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war. Even if we win, he told marchers in Minneapolis before the officer whose knee kept George Floyd from breathing was convicted of murder, it's relief, not victory. They're still killing our people. Stop the violence, save the children, keep hope alive. Calls to action. Jackson's voice, infused with the stirring cadence and powerful insistence of the black church, demanded attention. On the campaign trail and elsewhere, he used rhyming and slogans such as "a hope not dope," and if my mind can conceive it and my heart can believe it, then I can achieve it, to deliver his messages. Jackson's had his share of critics, both within and outside the black community. Some considered him a grandstander, too eager to seek the spotlight. Looking back on his life and legacy, Jackson told the Associated Press in 2011 that he felt blessed to be able to continue the service of our leaders before him and to lay a foundation for those to come. A part of our life's work was to tear down walls and build bridges. And in a half century of work, we've basically torn down walls, Jackson said. Sometimes when you tear down walls, you're scarred by falling debris, but your mission is to open up holes and others behind you can run through. In his final months, as he received 24-hour care, he communicated with family and members by holding their hands and squeezing. I get very emotional knowing that These speeches belong to the ages now. His son, Jesse Jackson Jr., told the AP in October. Drawn to civil rights, Jesse Louis Jackson was born on October 8, 1941, in Greenville, South Carolina, the son of high school student Helen Burns and Noah Louise Robinson, a married man who lived next door. Jackson was later adopted by Charles Henry Jackson, who married his mother. Jackson was a star quarterback on the football team at Sterling High School in Greenville, and he accepted a football scholarship from the University of Illinois. But after reportedly being told that people couldn't play quarterback, he transferred to North Carolina AT&T in Greensboro, where he became the first string quarterback, an honor student on sociology and economics, and student body president. Arriving on the historically black campus in 1960, just months after students were launched sit-ins and at a whites-only lunch counter, Jackson immersed himself in the blossoming civil rights movement. By 1985, he joined the Voting Rights March King led from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama. King dispatched him to Chicago to launch Operation Breadbasket, a Southern Christian leadership conference effort to pressure companies to hire black workers. Jackson called his time with King a phenomenal 4 years of work. Jackson was with King on April 4, 1968, when the civil rights leader was slain. Jackson's account of the assassination was that King died in his arms. Sharpton said he always wondered how much trauma that must have been for Jackson to witness King's death. He never would talk about it too much, but it drove him, Sharpton said Tuesday. He said, "We've got to keep Dr. King's legacy alive." With his flair for the dramatic, Jackson wore a turtleneck he said was soaked with King's blood for 2 days, including a King memorial service held by the Chicago City Council, where he said, "I come here with a heavy heart because my chest is the stain of blood from Dr. King's head." However, several King's aides, including speechwriter Alfred Duckett, questioned whether Jackson could have gotten King's blood on his clothing. There was no images of Jackson in pictures then taken shortly after the assassination. In 1971, Jackson broke with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference to form Operation Push, originally named People United to Save Humanity. The organization, based in Chicago on Chicago's South Side, declared a sweeping mission from diversifying workforces to registering voters and communities of color nationwide. Using lawsuits and threats of boycotts, Jackson pressured top corporations to spend millions and publicly commit to hiring more diverse employees. The constant campaigns often left his wife, Jacqueline Lavina Brown, the college sweetheart he married in 1963, taking the lead in raising their five children, Santita Jackson, Yusuf Du Bois Jackson, Jacqueline Lavina Jackson Jr., and two future members of Congress, U.S. Representative Jonathan Luther Jackson and Jesse L. Jackson Jr., who resigned in 2012 but is seeking re-election in the 2026 midterms. The elder Jackson was ordained as a Baptist minister in 1968 and earned his Master's of Divinity degree in 2000. Also acknowledged fathering a child, Ashley Jackson, with one of his employees at Rainbow Push, Karen L. Stanford. He said he understood what it means to be born out of wedlock and supported her emotionally and financially. Next story is titled "Local Leaders Remember Civil Rights Leader," written by Christy Jankowski. Jesse Jackson Sr. left his mark around the country, including much of central Illinois. With his passing, many are sending in their statements of support. Reverend Jesse Jackson made appearances in Danville, but notably for the family of Jelena Day. In October of 2021, the Commercial News reported about Reverend Jackson being present during Day's funeral. Jackson used his civil rights organization, the Rainbow Push Coalition, to bring awareness to Day's disappearance and death, calling the tragedy at the time an Emmett Till-type crime. His son, Jesse Jackson Jr., is currently running for the 2nd Congressional District in Illinois, which includes Danville and Northern Vermilion County, keeping politics and civil service in the family. Jackson shared, quite a few things on his social media following his father's passing, stating his father died peacefully and surrounded by family. His unwavering commitment to justice, justice, equality, and human rights helped shape a global movement for freedom and dignity. A tireless change agent, he elevated the voices of the voiceless, from his presidential campaigns in the 1980s to mobilizing millions to register to vote, leaving an inedible mark on history. Jackson's family posted in part a statement. U.S. Representative Robin Kelly, Illinois District 2, shared a statement as well. Reverend Jesse Jackson showed us what it meant to keep hope alive, Kelly shared. His faith, courage, and lifelong fight for justice improved our democracy and inspired generations. Senator Tammy Duckworth shared that the Reverend broke barriers in civil rights. Reverend Jesse Jackson was a barrier-breaking civil rights giant who spent his days, his nights, and his whole life working to improve the lives of others and patch America together into a great quilt of unity and common ground, Duckworth wrote. He grew up in a South that was married by segregated lunch counters and water fountains, but that never, ever stopped him from believing that America could, would, be better if we all had the courage to speak out, to sit in, to march across every bridge and through any obstacle that stood in the way of progress. Thank you for keeping the hope alive, Reverend Jackson. Now it's on each of us to carry your torch forward, Duckworth said. Locally, former Danville Alderman Lloyd Randall called Jackson iconic. Jesse Jackson was one of the most iconic civil rights activists, Randall said, and what Jesse Jackson was able to accomplish, particularly during most of his presidential campaigns, he was able to submit an ideology of what's right and fair and just across social, economic, and cultural lines, and that's what people need to know most about Jesse Jackson. Randall said while he and Jackson were not close friends, they did maintain a good professional relationship. The other thing that Jesse Jackson did quite successfully, Randall recalled, he was able to bring corporations to the table for equity, true diversity, true inclusion, based on the skill sets. And he said, and he was successful at getting corporations to at least give some semblance of normalcy in terms of their fair share back to communities. So that's what I think is most important to remember about Jesse Jackson. Current Alderman Ed Butler called Jackson a friend. My memory with him was marching with him in Bloomington, he said. He was a courageous man. I really liked his motto. He said in his speech, the American flag is red, white, and blue, but here we have a people of yellow, black, and white, and we are precious in God's sight. Butler continued, I really loved him for that and hate to see him gone, but all of our days are numbered, Butler said. He always said, I am somebody and we are somebody in this nation. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said Jackson's passing, we mourn the loss of the man whose sacrifices made it possible for people like me to be where we are today. Thank you, Reverend Jackson, for decades of leadership and blazing the way. Our hearts and prayers are with your family and all of you loved. The Jackson family additionally shared more of what Reverend meant to them in their statement. Our father was a servant leader, not only to our family, but to the oppressed, the voiceless, and the overlooked around the world, said the Jackson family. We shared him with the world, and in return, the world became part of our extended family. His unwavering belief in justice, equality, and love uplifted millions, and we ask you to honor his memory by continuing the fight for the values he lived by. And there's a couple of pictures, one of Jesse Jackson Jr. and one of Robin Kelly. Next story is titled Developer Change Produces Lengthy Debate, and this is written by Christy Jankowski in Danville. A deal to change the housing developer was nearly derailed after a lengthy and heated debate, but the Danville City Council approved an ordinance amendment that saved the transfer at Tuesday's council meeting. After amending the ordinance's language, the council approved transferring four homes near W. Seminary Street from Taylor Construction and Design of Urbana to refit properties of Alvin. The aldermen and alderwomen questioned whether a lien waiver could be used as a liability against the city. Well, the bottom line is the city has protection either way it goes, Williams said. If they don't fulfill the obligations, then the property returns to us if we choose so to take it. Alderman Doug Ahrens questioned it, and Alderwoman Tricia Teague agreed. The things that Alderman Ahrens has brought up to do give Beak pause, Teague said. I can concur that these are things that Alderman Ahrens brought up that do bring me some discomfort, but I cannot suggest a resolution that would make me more comfortable as far as language. Ahrens also said, I guess I would have hoped for something where they have acknowledged to us in writing that they are aware of all factors and agree to accept the new developer, and I don't know how the stuff was paid. Alderman Ed Butler was also questioned the city's liability. If within the language it doesn't fall through, and when we retrieve the homes and then there is a lien or lawsuit in dealing with workers or dealing with the materials, would we be liable, Butler said, to which Logan Kronk said the city would not be recapturing the property with a lien on it at that time, but we would still have the headache of having homes that are not finished, but we would have it regardless in this situation. The city could not be liable for a property that has been filed, a lien has been filed against. Kronk's relied heavily on the city's corporation council about the transfer. We have our freshly constructed homes that are sitting vacant, Kronk said. It would kill the project, Kronk said, if the council didn't approve the change Tuesday evening. They want to finish the acquisition by this Friday. Williams said there will be an amendment added to the change for those things, but council advised it wasn't necessary. Ahrens, however, did move to make an amendment changing the language. This council voted unanimously for this, followed by vote in favor of the amended contract change. I recognize we want the thing to move forward, Ahrens said. I would so move to amend the agreement to strike all references to city responsibilities as it relates to incurring any liens or insufficient title. There's just one obituary today. Catherine Ann Judy, 84, of Tilton, passed away at 1 p.m. on Monday, February 16th at Pleasant Meadow Senior Living in Chrisman. A service to celebrate the life of Catherine Ann Judy will be held at 2 p.m. on Friday, February 20th at Danville First United Methodist Church. Pastor John Tennyson will officiate. Burial will be at Sunset Memorial Park. Visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. prior to the service on Friday, also at Danville First United. Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville is entrusted in the arrangements. Next story is titled, New Animal Shelter Director Discusses Challenges with Lions, written by Mary Wycuff for the Lions Club in Danville. When Bryden Goodner stepped into his new role as director of Vermilion County Department of Animal Regulation and Shelter, he had several challenges to tackle. The Houston native plunged in, and he's proud of the changes that have been made. Goodner shared some of these challenges and details about his job with members at the Danville Lions Club recently. A significant concern is the condition of the building on the Catlin-Tilton Road. Built in 1984 with the adoption center added in 1994, the structure has deteriorated beyond repair. The county is not The county is not in a position to build one, and Goodner said there are some ideas, but doesn't know what might happen down the road. The shelter receives tax money from the county and city, as well as donations from groups, individuals, memorials, and grants. The shelter's foundation also helps by providing money for special cases. Rebuilding a partnership with the foundation was one of Goodner's accomplishments after he became director last July. Similarly, Goodner plans to visit area towns to discuss their contracts with the shelter. Danville, for example, contributes up to $400,000 a year to the shelter. When Goodner was appointed, he looked at ways to cut expenses at the shelter. The staff has been reduced to 23 people through attrition and has two part-time veterinarians. Last year, the shelter took in 3,400 animals. Of those, 1,432 were strays and 1,157 were surrendered by their owners, including more than 400 in Danville. The animal shelter is developing relationships with the rescue groups as one way to handle the influx of animals. Recently, shelter staff took 18 cats to Evanston, and a volunteer took another 39 cats to Colorado. The cat population at the shelter dropped from 209 at the one point in early December to 18 in January. There are dogs also being taken to other rescues. When the weather is bitterly cold, staff is busy checking on the welfare of pets that are outdoors. The American Red Cross website suggests bringing pets indoors when the temperature gets below 32 degrees. If that's not possible, then provide a draft-free shelter large enough so they can move around, but small enough to retain heat. The enclosure should sit a few inches off the ground, turned away from the wind, and the doorway covered with waterproof burlap or plastic. The local shelter, which is licensed by Illinois Department of Agriculture, handles all types of animals, including wildlife such as raccoons and bats. Goodner was a deputy with the Vermilion County Sheriff's Department for 21 years, retiring in 2025. He also served on the Vermilion County Board Representative District 1. For more information about the shelter, to request checks on animals' welfare, or to make donations, go to the website at www.vercounty.org/animal-shelter or call 217-431-2660. For more information about the Danville Lions Club, visit its Facebook page at facebook.com/Danville's Lions Club/or Lions District 1-M, website at www.district1m.org. There's a picture of Ryan Goodner, director of the Vermilion County Department of Animal Regulation and Shelter. Accept a check from Peg Morris, president of Danville Lions Club. The club made a donation after hearing Goodner speak about the challenges that the shelter faces. There's a picture on A2 of Liberty Village royalty. The Clifford and Connie Pusey were named the 2026 Liberty Village of Danville King and Queen of both Hawthorne Inn and Liberty Estates on Friday, February 13th, during a Valentine's Day party. The Puseys have been married for 74 years. Wow. Liberty Estates royalty was Paul Mule and Carol Coe. It's kind of neat. That many years. We'll read through some community briefs. Black History Music Showcases Set. Danville Area Community College Diversity Committee is presenting a Black History Month music showcase at 5:30 p.m. Thursday at Cedar and Smoke, located at 25 North Franklin Street in Danville. Y will be the featured act. Greer to speak at Lions Club. Ashton Greer with the Fisher Theater will speak to the Danville Lions Club at noon on Thursday, February 19th. The Lions meet at Spanky's Banquet Hall, located at 409 East Main Street in Danville. VFW hosts Meatloaf Dinner. The VFW Post 2395 Auxiliary will serve a meatloaf dinner from 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday, February 20th, at the Post, located at 1212 Liberty Street in Covington. The Post, as well as the dinner, is open to the public. The dinner includes meatloaf, cheesy potatoes, baked beans, and a roll. Price is $12, and for veterans is $10. Roberson serves as banquet speaker in Danville. Mary Catherine Roberson, the Director of Constituent Services for Congresswoman Robin Kelly will be the speaker for the 60th Annual Lincoln Douglas King Banquet at 5 p.m. Saturday, February 23rd at New Life Banquet Center. The banquet is sponsored by Allen Chapel AME Church of Danville and will also include the presentation of Allen Chapel's Community Service Award to Andres Coleman, the Business Award to Giselle Jill Mockaby, the owner of Dis and Dat Beauty Supply, and the first Outstanding Youth Award to Serenity Reed. For tickets and information, contact LDK Banquet Chair Alita Randall, Sandra Finch, or Virginia McKinney at 217-446-5639. Paint and Sip Night at Harrison Park in Danville. The City of Danville invites adults of to unwind and get creative at a paint and sip night from 5 to 6:30 p.m. on Friday, February 21st at the Harrison Park Golf Course Clubhouse. The guided painting experience will be led by local artist Katie Weston and is open to adults 21 and over. All art supplies are included and participants will take home their finished masterpiece. There are only 40 slots open and the cost of the event is $35 per person. For more information or to register, contact the City of Danville Parks and Recreation Department at 217-431-2288. And Church Host Taste of Deutschland in Danville. The Emmanuel Lutheran Church, located at 1930 North Bowman Avenue, will host the 30th Taste of Deutschland German Dinner and Dancing from 4 to 6:30 on February 21st. Tickets are $20 for adults and $5 for children under 12. The ticket will include entertainment from German band Keith Strauss and Polka Confetti, and the adult menu, which includes grilled brats, sauerkraut, red potatoes, green beans, pumpernickel or white bread, drink, and dessert. Contact the church office at 217-446-5675 or at www.ilcdanville.com for more information. A couple quick sports stores. Girls basketball, Bloomington 65, Danville 44. The Lady Vikings were only down 42-39 after the third quarter, but were outscored 23-9 in the IHSA Class 3A semifinal Tuesday. Audrina Burns had 17 points for Danville, while Jada Bell had 9, Chardon Hillsman had 7, Gabby Hertel had 5, and Briasha Bland added 4. The Lady Vikings end the season at 11-20, and then Salt Fork 32 and Chrisman 19 in Broadlands, and Hoopston area 84, Chrisman 60, and Armstrong Potomac was 58, Georgetown Ridge Farm 41, and Salt Fork 62 and Schlarman 32. And then one more, the Westville boys basketball team had a goal to get the most wins in the season. The Tigers ended the regular season doing that and much more on Tuesday, beating Bismarck Henning Rossville Alvins 56-48 to finish the regular season 31-0 and wrap up the Vermilion Valley Conference title. The Tigers will start IHSA Class 2A action on February 25th against either Shelbyville or Moroa Forsyth, while the Blue Devils will host Monticello in their home finale on Friday. So let's look in here. That looks like that'll be about it today, Thursday, October. It's not October, it's February, isn't it? February 19th, 2026. I hope you all have a good day. It looks like it's going to rain maybe today for a lot of us. Might be some thunderstorms, might be some tornadoes. They don't know really what's going on, but I'm loving this warmer weather. I hate it when it's down in the single digits there. I don't know about you, but and I don't really care about any more snow. So hopefully we're done. Hopefully the weekend will turn out okay. How about them Illini last night? They did a good job, didn't they? Beating the They're in California. I hope you all have a good day. Hopefully I'll see you again next week. Take care.